Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by resident In-N-Out hater and stat denier, Pete Zayas. How are you doing, Pete?
Stat denier. I'd be better if the Lakers won.
I'm trying to get us kicked off on like a lighter note, and you're just like immediately like right back down to, well, the Lakers sucked.
Yeah.
All right. So we were talking before we went live here. And this is just more of an aside point that we're going to – I want to get out of the way. And then we're going to get into, like, we're going to talk about Lonzo Ball and D'Angelo Russell. And I thought it was interesting that Lonzo seemed to kind of, like, really accept the challenge of going at D'Angelo Russell. And then you mentioned the type of game that he played was a little unique. We're going to talk about some of what not having structure really shows itself when you try to do the next man up thing. And then finally, we're going to talk about JaVale McGee and Tyson Chandler and now Mo Wagner and the way that they're covering pick and rolls. And there's a benefit to the way that they've approached it, but there's also a downside to it as well. And then if there's time, because this was the closest LeBron has come to saying, I want Carmelo Anthony on the team, we'll, I guess, address that a little bit, too. You can tell I'm really pumped to get into that aspect of the conversation. But I want to start just with a quick aside. It struck Harrison and I, we Silver Screen and Roll, we all have our Slack, and we organize who's going to take which article, which headline, which whatever. And we all tend to watch the post-game comments and post-game quotes at the same time, not necessarily with each other because we aren't in the same place at the same time, but we're just like sending messages back and forth. And one of the things that Harrison really noticed, and then when he pointed it out, it really struck me as well, was, wow, LeBron looked exhausted. Wow, all of the guys look really tired. They sound like crap. And JaVale McGee right now has sat out the last two games with flu-like symptoms. And what tends to happen when you're in closed, confined spaces with people who have the flu is that gets passed along in some way, shape, or form. And I don't know. I thought the Lakers were going to lose this game anyway because they didn't have JaVale. But in watching the way that the guys sounded, it wasn't just like bummed out because they lost the game. They sounded tired. They sounded sick. They're coming off the they're finally done with this long road trip. It just seemed it's why I can't get myself too frustrated with how the Lakers look tonight. It's just that this is a schedule loss. This was a tough one.
I feel like they could have won this game. I agree that they don't look particularly sharp, and I think that was most noticeable on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. The one thing I haven't loved how they've handled adversity, like when something doesn't go their way, I don't like how they've rebounded to that or reacted to that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're very shorthanded. I'm not, up in arms about the loss either. They're very shorthanded. Like you said, everyone's tired. They've been on the road for the last week. That's part of the NBA. Maybe everyone's feeling has caught some of what JaVale had, but, they had their opportunities. They shot 13 for 23 from the line. Mm-hmm. Went a very long stretch being very cold from three, blew a ton of defensive assignments and things like that. I think you're going to see kind of a rejuvenated team on Friday with the reinforcements coming back with Rondo and Brandon and hopefully JaVale as well, right? Couple days off
at home.
But I don't want to put lipstick on a pig, right? It was a 1-3 road trip at the end of the day against, the Nets, the Wizards, Charlotte, and mm-hmm. Houston. You want to go 3-1 on that. Not
absolutely.
1-3.
Absolutely. And no, I completely agree. And while the lipstick on a pig analogy strikes very close to home, because that's like my attempt at going out anytime I go out, it's tough because you got it is a disappointing road trip. It is a bummer that they started the road trip
a
game out of the top of the Western Conference, and they had this road trip against some teams that seemed like they should be able to take care of business, but But I think it does, again, go to show, like, anybody who is looking forward to the rotation without Brandon Ingram as a part of it, you guys are eating crow now. Like, that's what's going on there. You know what? Let's take a quick second. We'll have a shorter opening segment. When we come back, we're going to talk about Lonzo Ball, who I thought was a bit of a silver lining. It almost felt like a screw-it game, you know, an effort game.
For Lonzo specifically?
Yeah. It felt like you just went out there and said, you know what, screw it. I'm gonna let these shots fly. I'm not gonna think about it. I'm gonna let it fly. I'll let you react to that bit of brief analysis here in a second. Today's show is brought to you in part by Mazooma. Mazooma USA is the go-to one-stop shop for small businesses and handling their finances. I've been working with them now for about almost going on a year, and it's the best decision I've ever made in regards to growing the show. Really, we are down to the nitty-gritty. We have like two more shows, I guess, before we head into the Christmas break. We've all been there, where we overextend ourselves and buying gifts for our loved ones and trips over the holiday break, and there's no worse feeling where you look at the bank account and you say, oh no, what did I just do? And fortunately with Mazooma, I haven't had to worry about that at all. I had a budget that I was able to work out and understanding and getting ready for tax season that's right around the corner. This is what I can do for these upcoming holidays, and I don't have to stress out about whether or not I overexert myself. So give them a call at 213-947-6926. They have packages starting at only $75 a month. They have CPAs, bookkeepers, and accountants all here in the U.S., all readily available whenever you might need them. Again, that's 213-947-6926. That's Mazooma, your small business's one-stop shop for bookkeeping, taxes, and unlimited accounting advice. Does that kind of make sense? Like the idea of Lonzo not overthinking stuff, just like trying to fire off from three. There was that one play where he got the rebound on his own shot, and usually he almost always dribbles that back out and gets them set up again. He fired away, and I think he made that shot.
He did. That was my favorite play of the game from him, and there were a few. Lonzo needs more of that effort to him.
Yeah.
Like, screw, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm gonna.
He's an instinctual player, and it's very obvious is that he overthinks stuff on offense sometimes.
Right. And it's gotta be like, I'm gonna live or die. I'm gonna go down swinging if I fail, you know, like that not being afraid to fail is very important, especially for a young guy. That was a really unique game from him offensively. I didn't think he was particularly good on the defensive end, but I will take from a long-term perspective, you know, he had his three ball falling, which we've seen him have games like this before in that respect, but it was mixed in with some attacking the basket, a nice cut off of a post touch for LeBron. He had a really nice layup off of contact in the third quarter that he doesn't normally have the bend in him that he did on that particular make, where he absorbed contact. It was borderline and one type of play, and, you know, softly hit it off of the backboard. Those usually go clanging hard off the glass, you know. Yeah. And so just to see that mix. His career high was against Phoenix in the second game of his career, against a really bad Suns team that fired Earl Watson after the game after that.
He got Earl Watson fired.
Right. But that was probably the most impressive scoring performance from him. He got hot in a game at San Antonio that the Lakers won in a comeback last season. But what I liked about this performance is it wasn't just his three ball falling. He's starting to show some aptitude for finishing around the hoop and shots like that's really encouraging.
He took a shot that it wound up being an air ball from the free throw line, but he took a shot that as he released it was like, oh wow, that was a clean move. That was a good, confident, clean move. Now again, results kind of matter here a little bit, but you take that. I want to see more of that. I want to see him go out there and show that he can be a threat.
Right. No, that's what it's about, is being a threat, not overpassing. And because if he just gets defenders to commit to him, that's when the passing is really going to take off. But he just has to prove that he can make open shots, mm-hmm. On a credible, regular basis. And tonight was a really nice mix in that respect. It gives me some excitement that maybe some things are turning.
Do you think that was random? Like, do you think it just kind of happened, or do you think there was some of, hey, we're playing against the guy that I'm kind of sort of replacing?
I'm not the guy for that. I don't think Lonzo Ball really cares about D'Angelo Russell one way or another.
Agree.
Like, never played together, and
yeah.
I have been seeing some progress in terms of as a finisher. He's been shooting the ball so badly, Lonzo has, that. But he's still been putting up 8 points, 10 points, mm-hmm. there, right? And most of it has been on shots that he was missing, almost all of them earlier in the season. But this was the first night where, like, the three ball returned, and he was doing that too. And it's like, oh, hey, that's a different player at that point if mm-hmm. he's able to do that inside and out. So I feel like he just added, the jumper fell, and he added that to some of the progress he's already been making.
Yeah, I liked the game. I mean, I would have liked to seen the defensive side come along, or not,
for sure, yeah,
not fall off completely. I don't think it's as a result, but I would have liked to seen the defense stay there as well. You made a point before we went live here about the this is where you really start to see the lack of structure show up when you get all the injuries that the Lakers are dealing with. Remember, the Lakers they're missing at the beginning of the year, right? They're missing more than half of their starting five.
Yeah, no, right? Absolutely. And yeah, them being shorthanded, it makes it hard when so much of the offense is built around an individual player, when he's out of the game especially, and when it's guys like Svi and Wagner and Zubats for a couple minutes, and even Lance, honestly, like, where they are left more to their own devices rather than we run this system, we run these plays, and we can get deep. Like, because Lakers do run plays, right? It's just they don't get deep into those sets. Mm-hmm. And when there's that lack of familiarity, it's more difficult. You watch a team like, like San Antonio or a Toronto team, like when Kawhi misses time, and Kawhi is one of the best players in the NBA, they can just plug and play and keep going, right? Mm-hmm. They have something in place systemically where they can do that. And Lakers don't really have that. And I think that the injuries, along with the just loss of actual talent on the court, I think you lose some of that continuity. It's hard on the defensive end to make up for that, but I do think offensive structure can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's why I didn't have high hopes going into tonight. D'Angelo Russell, I think I saw the stat or that Billy Mack read the stat during the game that he is fourth in the league right now in terms of percentage on jumpers.
Fourth most made jumpers.
Fourth most made jumpers in the league heading into tonight's game. And that's the kind of player that the Lakers are. They're either going to have trouble with bigs who can step out and shoot, or they're going to have trouble with guards who can come around and knock down jumpers off of the dribble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We can tease this a little bit here. We can talk about this a little bit here, but we're seeing a huge blind spot in their defense, a monster blind spot. And it's the kind of blind spot that's going to come up and bite big time in the playoffs when you consider the type of guards that the Lakers are probably going to be going up against, right? It's not like you're going to face, I mean, Utah has Ricky Rubio, who is an awful shooter, but they aren't going to be going up against Rajon Rondos. They aren't going to be, they're going to be going up against guys who can come off of the pick and roll and be able to knock down these shots. And that puts the Lakers in all these kinds of weird situations. Now, I think the Lakers' problem tonight was more in regards to containment. Jared Dudley got to all the way to the rim from the 3-point line on multiple occasions, but these are trends that we're starting to notice over the course of the season, and look, I mean, because of the personnel, they're forced into this type of strategy, but I worry a little bit about having to go night in, night out, and the team knows exactly how you're going to play pick and rolls for the entire game. Eventually, teams are going to start figuring this out. And once again, it kind of came up to bite the Lakers in this one.
Yeah, I mean, Julius Randle took the Lakers' ability to switch with him to New Orleans.
Yeah.
And their ability to, you know, when you say that regarding their how they defend the pick and roll, there's pretty much drop coverages, right, where the guys are in back. They'll have Tyson come up and shock the ball, which means to hedge at the level of the ball screen. But they're not great perimeter defenders, JaVale or Tyson Chandler. And they tried to do that with Wagner to have him in a drop, and he's a guy where actually I think you want him to press up. That's more of his defensive talent. Mm-hmm. But it's just a flaw in the roster, man. It's just a function of that's how it's going to be. I would have liked to see in this game the Lakers press up on guys like Dinwiddie and Russell, especially Russell having and now he can convert on these, but I want a guy like that. I want to press up on him mm-hmm. on the perimeter. Beat us around the hoop, right? Yeah. Get to the rim, beat your guy off the dribble, finish at the basket. That's what I want to make him do. And the Lakers gave up way too many clean looks. Even a guy like Joe Harris, right, coming on off of an off-ball screen, the guy who is guarding, the guy who's setting the screen, isn't showing high enough. Mm-hmm. And so you get all these clean looks for guys who can make those. And like you said, you're going to see guys like that in the West in the playoffs. And part of it's personnel, right? But part of it is just, like, these are the bigs that we have, and we can't show that high because we're going to get burned on those. But I do think the Lakers can be better, if not good, at it.
Yeah, I want to keep building on this point and come at it from the perspective of, I use the analogy of a pitcher, and how there's a plus side to having consistency and everybody understanding where they should be in these pick and roll coverages, but there's the downside of the other team knowing night in, night out what you're going up against. So we're going to keep building on this in a bit, and then we get to talk about Carmelo Anthony. That's in the night on a nice high note. So during the break, I went on an obscenity laden tirade. you guys would have loved that. But I want to keep talking about this thing because what it comes down to is like find any pitcher, any basketball player even, right? Like if a basketball player has one dominant move, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had the most dominant shot in NBA history, and yet now nobody really would have been able to guard it almost no matter what, but if everybody knew every time he caught the ball that he was going to catch it, take a single dribble to his over his left shoulder, jump and release the shot, eventually teams might have sent a help side to that left shoulder, right? Like somebody eventually the teams would have done something to adjust to that. And even the most elite move in NBA history would have had there would have been a way to stop it because it became so predictable. And with the Lakers, let's not call their pick and roll coverage the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar of pick and roll coverages, but I do think though that you know, while it's great that they and it should make them better at covering these things really at this point, but it's good that they have the consistency. But even bad teams against the pick and rolls, like if you know exactly what you have to get ready for on a night in, night out basis, like eventually everybody's going to be able to score on them. Is that I don't know, is that an overreaction to the analogy or is there a legitimate concern here?
I mean, teams have to have the personnel to be able to take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. You know, like if your guard cannot, like Ricky Rubio can know that it's a drop coverage all he wants, but he's not going to, you know, take two dribbles, a hard dribble pull up and pull up from three and knock that down, you know.
Right, right.
And just as you're big, if you can't pick and pop, like, you know, he's not going to be able to take advantage of that.
I'm just laughing right now because the Lakers must look incredible in practice because you got Rajon Rondo who's not really going to be able to do that, and you have Lonzo Ball who's not really able to do that, and you don't have the bigs who can take advantage of that. So, like, they must look amazing defensively in practice.
to be fair, all told, when the bigs have been healthy,
yeah,
they've been about as good as you can expect from a team that basically just has that one pitch,
yeah,
that you were talking about, right? And so I don't want to complain too much about it. And, you know, we can discuss Julius Randle till the cows come home. Obviously, they'd be a better team with Randle. They have designs on doing more. Yeah, they have designs on getting different guys, mm-hmm, you know, over the course of this summer. And this is just a result of having the Lakers are they're a team that does not have all of their salary cap space committed long term yet. And so you kind of take the guys that you can get on an expiring deal at this point. And so these are the things that come from that, right? Like, you don't have the versatility. It is going to be very interesting in the playoffs when a team is probably going to be able to scheme just for you, right? Not probably, they will, mm-hmm, scheme just for the Lakers. But for now, they've done it about as well as I can hope. But yeah, it's a problem. I just don't think there's much of a solution to it.
You mentioned that there might be ways aside from, you know, maybe a harder hedging or maybe tagging the roller a little bit more. Like, is there anything strategically that the Lakers can do to, honestly, I'm just looking to sleep tonight. And it's something that like I it's in the back of my head and I can't get out of the back of my head.
There are a couple things. I have not loved how Lonzo's fought over screens recently. He had done a pretty good job for most of the year of getting over the top and still applying back pressure. So that's one thing that it's harder to pull up and knock that three down when you got someone breathing down your neck, mm-hmm, from behind. And so that's something the guards can do better. I understand having the bigs in a drop. I think that every once in a while, just you want to show a different look, even if it's not something that you want to do on a regular basis. Yeah, have JaVale blitz a pick and roll one every 10, 12, 15, mm-hmm, whatever, right? Or have him shock the ball, showing it the level of the ball screen. Just providing more variety, even if it's not necessarily playing to that player's strengths, just so that there is not that certainty of, like you said, I know it's coming every single time, and I'm going to be able to know exactly what I want to do here.
Right. It was interesting to watch Russell, who I mean, obviously I really like his game, but it was interesting to watch Russell where he would come around the pick and roll, and he just knew, like, he would come around and he just wait. I'm waiting for you. Go ahead, drop. I know what you're getting ready to do. And then he either had his shot or he had a huge gap to be able to fit a pocket pass through, and he was just waiting for either of those things to open up. I like D'Angelo Russell's game, but if D'Angelo Russell is picking you apart at will and Spencer Dinwiddie is picking you apart at will, that doesn't speak very well for when you're going up against the James Hardens, the Chris Pauls, the Steph Currys, the Dame Lillards, even. Sure. So something I'm a little concerned about. Also, what I'm a little concerned about is Carmelo Anthony once again being in Lakers headlines. So I'll read you the exact quote since it just popped back up onto my timeline. Thank you to the asshole who just put that back on my timeline. But LeBron, this is from Stefan. Is it Stefan? I think it's Stefan Bondi of the New York Daily News. LeBron says he wants to play with Carmelo Anthony. Quote, "We'll see. I don't run the team. There are obviously things that need to be worked out on both sides, but I always wanted to play with Melo. And if it's the opportunity, and if the opportunity presents itself, it'll be great. So we'll see what happens." So when the quote first came out, you had people jumping to the conclusion that when he said there need to be things worked out on both sides, I think that people jump to the conclusion of, like, we are working on things on both sides of the ball, which kind of highlights potential shortcomings of the roster that maybe LeBron James thinks could be fixed by Carmelo Anthony. I just don't find it believable that maybe the most efficient basketball player in the history of the game looks at Carmelo Anthony and says, that guy is fixing our defensive holes.
Right? No, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily how he thinks, but yeah. I think that, like, that's his very longtime friend that he has a lot of respect for and respect for his game. And whether or not we agree, right, that's one of his guys, mm-hmm, right? And So the idea that LeBron wants to play with Melo is totally, I totally believe him on that. But when he says, like, I feel like when we get into the, like, what does it mean when he says both sides need to work something out? Like, these are, when you walk into an NBA locker room after a game, it's jam-packed full of people, mm-hmm. and guys who have just been running for the last 2.5 hours. Right. And so they don't choose their words exactly correct. Like, you know, that could mean any number of things of, like, you know, both sides need to work. Like, yeah, they need to, Houston would need something in a trade because he's still with the Rockets. The Lakers would like to know, are you going to come off of the bench? Are you going to fit into your role? Are you going to play defense? Right. And Melo would want to know what his role is too. To me, it's a nothing burger, honestly. And, you know,
wow, another shot at In-N-Out. Jeez. Yeah.
I don't think there's much to it.
I mostly agree. The only, and to be fair to LeBron, it's a question asked of him, right? Like, he could very easily have said, like, no, I don't want to talk about this. Just like ESPN put out a report about Anthony Davis. And Dave McMenamin asked LeBron, apparently point blank, what would you think if the Lakers traded for Anthony Davis? And he was like, it would be amazing. Duh. You know,
I know. And then I went to ESPN tonight, and it's like one of the headlines on the sidebar is like, LeBron thinks that trading for Anthony Davis would be amazing.
Yeah. Like, you should add the duh part.
Yeah.
I had to write both the Carmelo thing and the Anthony Davis thing tonight after the game. And
fun.
It was a banner night in the Irwin household. And for the Davis thing, I agreed with LeBron. Duh, it would be great. I would love to watch Anthony Davis on the team. That's not him saying. He didn't even mention trade. He didn't mention anything specifically about, like, how Davis would get there. He just said it would be great if Anthony Davis was a Laker. It would be amazing if Anthony Davis would be a Laker. Duh. And I think here with Carmelo Anthony, and I agree with your reading of the situation, upon, like, sitting back and actually writing out the article, I agree. Like, the both sides thing was, Carmelo Anthony has a side, Houston has a side, the Lakers have a side, the Lakers coaching staff has a side. There are tons of angles to this. It's not a matter of, like, the Lakers need to work on their game on both sides of the court. It was, no, there's a bunch of people who need to come to an agreement if we're to make this happen. And if it worked out, playing with one of my best friends in the league would be great. And I don't think any of that is newsworthy at all. So
that's right, man. That's right. I'm sorry. I get fatigued.
No.
It's like these manufactured stories that, like, don't really exist in any real way, and then it's just kind of, like, created out of nothing.
Yeah.
And then to get clicks and get all of that stuff, and then it, you know, goes back into the ether, and then you just move on to the next. I don't know.
I like how games now are just opportunities to ask LeBron who he want, like, about players he could play with.
Yeah.
Like, I need somebody to ask him, how would you feel about playing with Spencer Hawes?
I will not be that somebody.
All right. Last thing I want to finish on. I know I'm not going to be able to get you to give a funniest part of the game, but I did find one. I do have one. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. So at one point in, I believe it was the first quarter, when Lonzo was going off, he was shooting really well, obviously, and everybody freaked out because Luke pulled him, and it turned out that Luke pulled him because of the two fouls. Now, we don't have to get into the Would it have been smart to pull him with two fouls? Can you not just trust Lonzo to not pick up his third or whatever? But it turns out that the scorers had given Lonzo Ball one of Zubats's three fouls that he picked up in a matter of, like, 2 minutes, right? Zubats didn't play from that point forward. And I can't help but, like, feel like it wouldn't be hilarious if Luke refused to play Zubats just in case they're giving fouls to Lonzo instead of to Zoo. So it's like, fouls on Zoo. No, wait, is it Zoo or Zoe? I guess just give it to Zoe. And then Zubats doesn't go back in there anymore. Not funny? I'm sorry. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. We'll be back at it again. Well, I'll be back at it tomorrow. We'll see if Pete ever comes back on ever again. But thanks very much, Pete, for creating time this late in your evening. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. And yeah, we'll talk to you tomorrow.